My name is George Behrend, and I was born in 1922, which was the same year that the railways all got together and said we must have some international standards so that we don't have this business of delays at frontiers because carriages wouldn't couple up and all that kind of thing. The main thing about my first trip was that because of this business of being young and being put to bed early, I was sort of bundled into the sleeping car while everybody else went and had dinner. And so I couldn't see a great deal because they thought it was best to have the blind down, which I found really trying. So I sort of looked at the marquetry and all these wonderful brass fittings and swinging strap that they had, and which is supposed to give you something to grab if the thing suddenly lurks. When I was young, the people who were travelling on that were partly holiday makers, partly wealthy businessmen, partly military people spying, partly government couriers. All the government messengers went by trains, and they had regular bookings, and they always went in pairs. And of course, the whole idea of Grand European Expresses was that you didn't have any ordinary carriages, and therefore you could tear along quick, and the people on board were all supposed to be, you know, with diplomatic passports and that sort of thing, and so they were very quickly whizzed through the customs, whereas ordinary trains could be stopped for ages while they unloaded all the bag and baggage of their third class, who were always supposed to be smuggling. The whole business was very slow compared to nowadays. So you travel really more comfortably because the things were much more comfortable at 60 miles an hour, and they had this most wonderful elegant panelling, mostly mahogany, inlaid mahogany panelling. And ladies always wore hats in the dining car, and sometimes the gentlemen did too. And then they had spittoons. I thought this was very old-fashioned, but apparently if they didn't have spittoons, they had trouble. In those days, everything was steam, and it made the most appalling mess. And they had double glazing, had things called louvres, which you could alter to turn slightly so that the glass of the outer louvres were against the direction of the train, and that way the smoke didn't come straight in through the open window if you had it open. And everything got filthy, of course, because the first time we went through a tunnel, it came got filthy anyway, however much they cleaned the thing. Ladies used to wear white gloves, and they used to eat with them sometimes, and of course you always wiped the silver with your table napkin before you started to get the smuts off. These Grand European Expresses had this wonderful reputation for food, which they started in 1883, and just carried on. And the people who ran them were top chefs, and somehow or other they produced these top five-course meals, which was good enough for royalty when they were travelling incognito. So you had about five courses of soup, fish, entree, joint, and then salad, and then cheese, and then dessert. What I didn't realise at the time was that I was frankly lucky and just caught the old-fashioned way of travelling, because, for example, in 1929 was the first year that they'd invented heavy-duty pneumatic tyres, and in 1930 suddenly there were motor coaches everywhere instead of people travelling sitting up all night on wooden seats in third-class carriages in the railway. They whizzed along at 60 miles an hour, twice as fast as the trains, in comfortable motor coaches, which didn't exist then.